grin slipping into a smaller smile. He stood up and handed her one, gesturing for her to follow him. Hollow raised an eyebrow at him, but shrugged and waited for him to lead the way. They walked in silence, which grew more companionable with every step. Peller was clearly excited about something, and his excitement was infectious. What was he going to do with Yellow Tops? The question had just turned over in Hollow's mind when they topped a rise, and she knew what he was going to do. She lengthened her stride and caught up with him, pulling him to a stop. Peller's eyes met hers just as Hollow leaned up and kissed him.
"It was you," she said. "You were the one."
Peller nodded. She kissed him again and grabbed his hand, dragging him after her as they made their way down the rise to the neat graves set in the dale below. Wordlessly, they stopped and knelt in front of the mounds. After a moment, they leaned forward and carefully placed the small Yellow Tops on each grave. One was Tolder's, one was Tenham's, but Holla could not tell which was which, nor did she care. In her mind, the dead were clear of all debts. Zist was surprised at the sight of Morin. His memories of the man were over a dozen turns old, but he hadn't expected to find the young man he had sent on a perilous journey changed into such an old, worried person. "Master Zist, I'm sorry," Morin said, bowing deeply. "I failed you and the Master Harper." Zist waved his apology aside.
"Not your fault, boy. The job was bigger than you."
"Then why have you let Lord Fenner send a mere girl on the same mission?" Morin demanded hotly, meeting Zist's eyes squarely. Zist raised an eyebrow and turned an inquiring look to Lord Fenner, who had the grace to look embarrassed. Behind him, however, a girl who bore a remarkable resemblance to Crom's lord merely snorted in annoyance.
"Father was absolutely right to send Holla," the girl declared. "She's a girl, after all."
"Nera, hush," Fenner said quellingly.
Nera took an involuntary step backward before she caught herself, huffed, and defiantly regained her previous position.
"I will not. You were right to send Holla. She was a much better choice to deal with the Shund."
"She was so small," Morin objected.
"Exactly,"
Nera said, pouncing upon his words.
"No threat to anyone, and quick on her feet as well as her wits."
"So where is she?" Morin demanded.
Nera's exultant look collapsed, and she was reduced to murmuring,
"They didn't find her body at the Firestone mine."
"The Dragon Riders could search for her," Zist suggested.
"Not Telgar," Nera declared. "They'd take her to the mines."
She pointed at Morin.
"They were all ready to take him to the mines, except that Father refused."
She sniffed.
"At least Dagon still recognizes the rights of the Lord Holder, if nothing else."
"Nera, that's no way to talk about our Weir leader," Fenner said. But it was clear to Zist that his heart wasn't in it.
Nor could the Harper blame him. He had seen enough of Dagon's imperiousness firsthand. Dragon Rider or not, the man bore his rank and responsibilities poorly.
"What did you ask this girl to do?" Zist asked Fenner.
"I asked her to track down the Shund in hopes of opening communications with them," Fenner said.
"That's what Master Zist asked of me," Morin exclaimed.
Nera looked ready to say something acerbic, but was quelled by a look from her father.
"The traitors had taken her under their protection," Fenner explained. "They agreed to lend her aid and support."
"And if she had contacted the Shund, what then?" Zist asked,
curious to see if Crom's Lord Holder had come up with a solution to the knotty problem of Pern's dispossessed.
"Arrangements could be made," Fenner said.
He met Zist's eyes squarely.
"Some of those are doubtless people I've shunned myself, but the Red Star grows larger and Thread will return. And when it does, what then will people with nothing to lose not do in order to survive?"
Zist nodded.
"That was a question the Master Harper and I considered many turns ago."
He glanced at Morin.
"Our plan miscarried, however."
"The only plan that seems to be working is Dagon's," Fenner admitted ruefully. "Round them up and force them to mine Firestone."
"Perhaps not force," Zist said, "but encourage."
To Lord Fenner, he explained.
"We've just discovered records that indicate there might be two types of Firestone."
He went on to describe the meeting at High Reach's Weir and the conclusions that McCall, Kindon, and Kristoff had reached.
"So they are going to the southern continent?" Fenner asked in surprise.
Only the shore, Zist said in reassurance, to see if they can find any of this fire lizard firestone.
A firestone that doesn't explode in water, Morin muttered to himself. He looked up at Zist.
What do the Shund have to do with this?
This new firestone wouldn't be deadly to mine, Zist explained. And all Pern will need it soon. If they could be convinced to mine it, their place and protection would be assured directly by the Weirs.
That could work, Morin agreed, stroking his chin thoughtfully. He looked up again to Master Zist.
Master, I'd like to offer my services. I will make contact with the Shund.
And find Hala while you're at it,
Nera demanded.
And find Hala, Morin agreed, turning to sketch a short bow in the girl's direction.
Perhaps Belel will drop you somewhere along our way, Zist said, turning to the green rider who had silently watched the entire exchange.
For a firestone that doesn't explode, I will do anything, Belel agreed fervently.
The southern continent. Kristoff couldn't believe his luck as he sat perched atop Hearth's huge neck and peered cautiously down at the headland below. Beside them, Blue Talith struggled to keep up with the huge bronze dragon's easy turn of speed. It had startled Kristoff for a moment to think that dragon riders couldn't just go to the southern continent.
We need someone who's been there before, Devin had explained when they first set out. Perhaps someone in Ista will know.
Weir leader Corian greeted them courteously enough when they arrived in Ista Weir's bowl.
What do you want with the southern continent, Devin? He asked when Devin presented their request.
Firestone, Devin said immediately. He recounted the meeting at High Reaches and the conclusion reached by Kindon, Kristoff, and McCall. Corian looked skeptical until Devin added,
McCall was a dragon rider many turns back.
Firestone accident? Corian asked.
Devin nodded.
There have been so many of those.
He looked at Kristoff.
And you say there's a firestone that doesn't burn in water?
The fire lizards got their name for some reason, Kristoff pointed out.
And Baraller approves this?
Corian asked, rubbing his chin thoughtfully.
Well, he's a cautious one.
If he says so, then I'm up for it.
Do you know someone who could guide us? Devin asked.
Corian heaved a sigh before replying.
You know that the southern continent is banned.
When Devin nodded in agreement, he continued.
There's good reason for it, I'm sure.
But I've one blue rider who won't listen to reason and just flies off by himself now and again. When he comes back, he's always got these most amazing fruits of the largest size.
He goes to southern? Devin asked.
I've never asked,
Corian replied drolly, his eyes lit with amusement.
But perhaps he can guide you.
And so, without actually saying it aloud, Devin managed to get Jatrell to agree to give him the coordinates, provided he could come along.
I suspect he wants an official reason to know where the southern continent is, Devin confided with the grin to Kristoff as they rose out of Istabul and took station beside the wiry blue dragon. And now, here they were.
Devin gestured to the beaches beyond the headland, indicating that they should land there. The sun was warm and the sand hot as they jumped down and looked around. At some unspoken word from Hearth, Devin laughed and told his dragon,
Yes, go play, but be ready when I call.
With a huge cooling breeze from his wings, Hearth leapt into the air. Soon he and Jatrell's Talith were cavorting in and out of the warm southern water.
Any sign of your ox, Kristoff?
Jatrell asked as he strode up to them. Kristoff looked dismayed to hear the fire lizard's firestone referred to as your rocks. He wondered how the dragon riders would react if none were found.
Are there any fire lizards around? He asked hopefully.
Maybe we could find the rocks they like.
After an hour, Devin suggested they try further south. The dragons returned from their water play quickly enough, though neither Kristoff nor Devin were quite happy to be riding a wet dragon.
We won't go between, Devin said reassuringly to Kristoff,
but fly straight. Call out if you see anything.
They checked out two more beaches, but there was no sign of any rocks worthy of consideration.
Let's rest a bit and continue later, Devin suggested as they trudged in the hot sand.
Good idea, Jatrell agreed readily.
I know where to get some fruit. His face fell as Devin smiled knowingly at him, but he recovered quickly, adding, It's the best fruit you'll ever taste.
I'm sure of it, Devin said.
He waved Jitrell off and called Hearth in from the sea. The dragon curled up comfortably in the sand, tired from his exertions. Jitrell returned shortly, his sack full of large, orange-mottled fruits, which he shared with the other two. Christoph waited until Devin had bitten into one. Manners, he would have said, if challenged. But when the weir leader's face lit with appreciation, Christoph's restraint vanished.
They're great, he exclaimed, as soon as he swallowed his first bite.
He had never tasted anything like it. He could completely understand why Jitrell had ignored all prohibitions to search out this fruit. Silence descended as the three ate heartily. The silence continued as the sun reached its highest point and bore down on them relentlessly. Fortunately, Hearth agreeably stretched a wing out over Devin and Christoph, providing them with shade. Jitrell sought the company and protection of his smaller Talith. Soon, all three humans and two dragons were asleep, lulled by their full stomachs, exertions, and the hot noon sun. Christoph woke with a start, angry with himself for nodding off. He tried to get up, but discovered he was trapped by Devin's arm across his chest. Devin silenced him with a look, and then, deliberately, turned his head slowly forward, away from Christoph. Christoph followed his gaze. Fire lizards. He tracked them with his eyes, picking out prominent landmarks so that he would know exactly where they had been. There was a little queen and several bronzes. A mating flight? No, there were blues, greens, and browns as well. Idly, Christoph wondered whether a fire lizard could help in the mines. One of the bronzes had noticed them. It flew toward them and then, with a chirp of surprise, blinked between. Immediately, the rest of the fire lizards vanished. Devin chuckled. Hearth tells me that the bronze couldn't believe he was looking at a relative that was so big. Devin released Christoph and the two got up. Jitrell joined them, his eyes alight.
Such antics! Did you get a good fix on their location?
Not far from that promontory, Christoph replied, pointing. Maybe 500 or 600 meters away.
It's a pity they weren't flaming, Jitrell said.
It's possible that they won't be looking for Firestone until the first threadfall, Devin remarked, with a sideways glance at Christoph. Christoph groaned, and his shoulders slumped.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that.
Nor had anyone else, Devin told him reassuringly. Still, we can look. He cocked an eyebrow at Jitrell. Is your Talith up to chewing strange rocks?
Certainly,
the Blue Rider replied after a moment's silent communication with his dragon.
It's a pity we forgot to bring a shovel, Devin remarked as they started toward the promontory.
Behind him, Hearth grumbled and leapt into the air, arriving at the site before them. A shower of flying sand flew into the air as the great dragon began to dig.
Sorry, Hearth. I had forgotten we didn't need one, Devin apologized with a smile.
For a fire lizard, the stones would have to be about this big, wouldn't they?
Jitrell asked Christoph, making a shape about half the size of his fist.
I suppose,
Christoph agreed judiciously. He looked around.
And they wouldn't bother with the larger rocks. So if he found any place where there were lots of larger rocks of the same type, and no smaller ones...
Like these?
Devin asked, holding up a rock the size of his fist. Christoph beckoned, and Devin tossed the rock to him. The young miner examined it for a moment, started to toss it aside, then changed his mind and tossed it to Jitrell.
That's too heavy for Firestone. It should be lighter.
Christoph spied some rocks not far from Hearth's new hole. He walked over and picked one of them up.
This is more like it, he said, hefting the rock judiciously.
It looks like sandstone, Devin said, picking up another one from the pile.
Christoph nodded and threw his rock down hard on a larger rock. His specimen cracked, revealing a blue-green crystal.
Is that Firestone? Devin asked.
It could be, Christoph replied.
There's only one way to find out,
Jitrell said, picking up the other half of Christoph's specimen.
Talith, if you'd be so kind.
The blue dragon opened its mouth and Jitrell threw the rock into it. Shortly, there came the grinding sound of a dragon chewing, and then Talith swallowed, visibly and audibly.
Now we wait,
Jatrell said. The three found it impossible to wait patiently. Christoph found himself examining the promontory for more signs of sandstone or blue-green rock. Devin found more of the sandstone rocks and started cracking them, throwing the ones that were pure sandstone into one pile and the ones with hints of the blue-green rock into another pile. Jatrell merely spent his time nervously pacing in front of his dragon.
So how do you feel? Jatrell asked out loud. Does it feel like Firestone?
Before he could get a response, he jumped away, arms outstretched, crying, Stand back! Talith opened his mouth and burped. A tiny flicker of flame erupted.
That took longer than regular Firestone, Devin said.
Talith says that it didn't burn, and he'd like to try some more, Jatrell reported,
gathering up some of the rocks that Devin had sorted and feeding them to his dragon. Devin started doing the same with Hearth. In a few short moments, both dragons produced a decent flame, and both pronounced it much less stressful than the Firestone they were used to.
Does it look like they can sustain flame longer? Devin asked Jatrell.
Yes. It seems like this Firestone produces the fire gas more slowly, Jatrell agreed.
He looked up at Talith again.
Is that how it feels to you?
Christoph understood Talith's response merely from the blue's emphatic nod. He picked up a specimen and walked with it to the sea.
Christoph, what are you doing?
Devin asked, his voice tinged with equal parts curiosity and alarm. Christoph threw his rock with its exposed blue-green crystal into the surf and watched carefully. Nothing. No explosion. No puff of gas. Nothing.
I just wanted to be sure, he said,
turning around and walking back to the others. He picked up several specimens and stuffed them into his pouch.
This Firestone doesn't explode on contact with water.
There must be something extra in the dragon's stomachs to make the flame, Devin suggested,
hefting a rock in his palm.
If this were the old Firestone, the sweat from my palms alone would produce some gas.
If this were the old Firestone, all the sea air would have combusted long ago, Christoph remarked.
Well, now that we've got the right Firestone, what do we do next? Jatrell asked.
We find it in the north, if we can, and mine it, Christoph replied.
He turned to Devin. I'd like to start immediately.
If not sooner, Devin agreed, looking very thoughtfully at his sample.
It was a long moment before Christoph's agitated movements attracted Devin's attention. The dragon rider smiled at him, but did not apologize, merely gesturing for Christoph to mount Hearth.
I do not understand,
Hala cried to Peller in exasperation. Peller started to write again, but Hala pulled the stick out of his hand and snapped it in two, throwing it to the ground.
Our traps are here. Our food is here. Why do you want to go north?
Peller sighed and picked up the thicker piece of his broken stick. Bending down, he wrote, Dragon Riders.
That's what you said before,
Hala exclaimed, her frustration evident.
We can avoid them. The woods are too thick for them to land, and we can hide.
She looked up entreatingly into Peller's eyes.
We're safe here,
she said in a small voice.
We don't have to run anymore.
Peller nodded, but still he smoothed out the patch of dirt he had written on and bent down to write again. We help.
Help?
Hala repeated.
We don't need help. We can get along just fine on our own.
Thread, Peller wrote in response.
Thread won't come for turns. You said so,
Hala replied irritably. What was wrong with him? Peller wrote the word fight just above thread.
Fight? Thread?
Hala shook her head.
Why should we worry about that? That's Dragon Rider's work.
Peller nodded, then wrote another word above fight. The word was Firestone.
Firestone, fight, thread,
Hala repeated. She paused to digest the meaning.
The Dragon Riders need Firestone to fight thread and you want to help them?
Peller nodded, smiling. Hala shrieked at him.
You'll get killed!
He shook his head.
Then you'll get burned just like your friend.
She pushed him away from her, tears streaming down her face.
Go on then! Get killed! See if I care! She cried,
and ran away from him into the dense underbrush. She didn't go far, and crumpled into a small heap when she failed to hear Peller coming after her. I don't need him, she thought. I can survive on my own. After a moment she asked herself, Then why do I hurt so much? Peller sat in silent thought for a long time after Hala had run off. Then, with a sigh, he stood and walked off purposefully in the opposite direction.
There! Morin pointed below them as they flew over the vast barren country north of Kia.
Zist peered down, following his arm, and saw faint marks on the dusty ground below.
It could be traitors.
This far north? Morin asked, shaking his head.
To Palel, he said. Put me down somewhere in front of them. Moments later, they were on the ground, and Morin was hefting his pack onto his back.
You'll stay in touch?
Morin nodded.
I will.
And be careful.
More than last time.
If I don't hear from you in a month,
you'll hear from me, Morin promised, turning toward the oncoming wagon.
Probably sooner than that.
Hulla awoke, angry with herself for having fallen asleep and cold from the chilly late afternoon breeze. She peered blearily around for Peller, and then remembered their last conversation and how she had pushed him away.
People always leave, she thought bitterly.
Why should Peller be any different? Something caught her eye, fanned by the breeze. Hulla turned her attention to it, then pounced on it eagerly. It was a pair of yellow tops, their stalks twined together. Hulla picked them up and held them gingerly in her hands, impressed at how deftly Peller had woven them together. A smile wobbled on her lips. In the distance, she saw another bright bundle. Intrigued, she went toward it and discovered another pair of yellow tops. She picked them up, too, just as she noticed a third pair. A trail. Hulla's earlier thought echoed. People always leave. But no one had ever left her a trail. It was dark by the time Hulla caught up with him. She would have missed the last bundle of yellow tops if Peller's trail hadn't continued unerringly north. He was camped in the open, which surprised Hulla. Clearly, he wasn't worried about intruders, but his lack of precaution increased the danger of attack from night animals. Peller slept like someone who was under a nighttime watch.
Who?
The answer brought a smile to her lips.
Her.
She dropped her armload of yellow tops on the ground beside him. She stuffed them into her pack where they would create a great pillow and lowered herself to the ground, dropping her pack under her head. She lifted his blanket. Peller shivered in the night air until she bunched herself up, scooched against him, and lowered the blanket. For a moment, Peller was awake. He wrapped an arm possessively over her, drawing her tight against his stomach. Then he fell asleep once more. Though her back was against him, she knew he was smiling. She smiled, too, and closed her eyes peacefully, a feeling she hadn't felt in turns overflowing in her heart. She had only one name for it. Home. Christoph was depressed. They had been searching the shoreline of high reaches for 3 days, and they had nothing to show for it but a nasty collection of cuts, bruises, and sore muscles. Except now, Alara had broken her leg as she ran from a rock slide they had caused with their digging. She had been quickly evacuated to the weir, where the healer had set her leg and ordered her to rest until the bone knitted together once more, at least 6-7 days. Christoph had insisted on continuing the search, and Devin, after consulting with Baraller, had reluctantly returned Christoph to the mountains south and east of their previous location. Hearth will be listening if you need help, Devin told him. Otherwise, I'll send someone by next 7 day. When Christoph looked curious, wondering why Devin hadn't promised to return himself, the wing leader said, The hatching will be any day now. Seeing as we want to present as many suitable candidates as possible, I'll be riding in search. Christoph promised himself that he would not call the Bronze Dragon except to announce success. On the first day, he had no luck at all. He wasn't sure if his technique was right anyway. He would stop at a spot that caught his fancy, usually a place where the rock had been bared already, and dig around it, looking for signs of sandstone in the layers. If he found any, he'd dig around looking for loose rock. Failing that, he'd use his pick to break some rock free. He worked for no more than an hour and then moved northward again, looking for a new spot. In this way, he covered 2 kilometers and had made 5 excavations by nightfall. The next day, though sore, he repeated this method. He was pretty certain that he had found a vein of sandstone, but he couldn't be sure. He had never learned this sort of Minecraft from his father, or even from Tolder. On the third day, Christoph changed his tactics, deciding to dig deep into the sandstone vein he had located the night before. It was a hot day, and Christoph was all the hotter, digging into the moist cliff in front of him. He liked sandstone because it was soft. He disliked it because it was crumbly, not a good supporting material. He had dislodged a fair amount of the soft stone and was making amazing progress digging into the side of the mountain when it happened. From one blow to the next, the whole nature of the vein changed, and instead of a trickle of loose rock, Christoph suddenly found himself facing a flow, then a rush, and finally a torrent of sandstone that threw him backward and engulfed him. For the past 2 days, Peller had been traveling due north, and Halle had followed. They were tired, irritable, and hungry, but they were together, and Halle found that Peller's mute companionship more than made up for his annoying determination. Thirst, however, was something neither could ignore, and so they were drinking at a stream when Halle heard it, a distant rumble that quickly died away. A glance at Peller confirmed that he had heard it too.
"Come on!"
Halle shouted, racing off in the direction of the sound. When they reached a clearing, they spotted a cloud of dust rising about a kilometer north of them. Wordlessly, they broke into a steady, ground-eating trot. Peller lengthened his stride, his long legs quickly widening the gap.
"Go on!"
Halle called, waving him onward.
"I'll catch up!"
When Halle arrived at the site, she found Peller inspecting the remains of a mine. She quickly toured the immediate area and found a campsite. The footprints around it belonged to one person, someone bigger than her, but not by all that much. She returned to Peller and the disaster.
"Only one person,"
she told him between ragged breaths. She knelt over, filling her lungs with cooler air and forcing herself to take slow, deep breaths. Peller nodded and began to pull armloads of the rocks away.
"You think he's there?"
Halle asked as soon as she had recovered. She stepped up opposite him and began to throw stones away. She stopped when she caught sight of something shiny among the coarse red rock. Thinking it was odd, she quickly pocketed it, then returned to her work. A little while later, Peller encountered Hare. He wrapped two rocks together to get Halle's attention and pointed. Wordlessly, she came around to where he was and began to help. In moments, they uncovered a head.
"I know him!" Halle cried. "That's Christoph!"
Peller nodded and bent over the face, clearing the smallest dirt away. He pressed his ear close to Christoph's mouth and then looked up at Halle, alarmed. Then, to her surprise, he leaned over again and parted Christoph's lips, put his own mouth over Christoph's, and blew a deep breath.
"Peller!"
Halle exclaimed disgustedly.
"Ugh!"
Peller paid her no attention, looking instead at Christoph. He repeated the movement. This time, Christoph coughed and sputtered.
"Stay still,"
Halle ordered.
"You're in a landslide."
Quickly, Peller and Halle dug Christoph's chest out from under the loose rock. It took more effort and more care to extract his legs. Finally, Peller motioned for Halle to stand back and gestured that he would pull Christoph out.
"No, I won't,"
she declared firmly, eyeing the rocks above them.
"We'll do this together."
Peller pursed his lips angrily in response, and Halle stuck her hands on her hips and glared in return. Peller gave her one last angry look, sighed, shook his head regretfully, and gestured for her to come help. Together, slowly, they pulled Christoph out from the landslide. When he was far enough out, Halle moved to his legs and picked them up. Christoph groaned painfully.
"I'm sorry,"
Halle told him, "but we've got to get you away from here."
"My rock!"
Christoph cried through clenched teeth.
"Shh!"
Halle told him soothingly.
"We can find you plenty of rocks."
Christoph was in too much pain to argue. They went about 20 meters before Peller gestured to Halle to set the boy back down.
"I'll get some water,"
Halle said, moving quickly to the campsite. Peller was kneeling beside Christoph when she returned.
"Am I dead?"
Christoph asked Halle.
"No,"
Halle replied testily.
"But he's dead,"
Christoph said, pointing to Peller. Halle shook her head and opened the flask.
"Here, drink this."
When Christoph complied, spluttering a bit on the water, she looked at him and said,
"There, do you think dead people cough when drinking?"
Christoph thought for a moment, then shook his head. He winced at the movement. Peller laid a hand on his head and glanced up to Halle, shaking his own head.
Peller says that you shouldn't move your head,
Hala told him, her tone implying that she expected that Kristoff had already figured that out himself.
You can talk to him?
Kristoff asked in wonder. Hala shook her head.
No,
but it's easy to guess what he means. Peller shot her a penetrating look and broke into a huge grin.
My rock, Kristoff said. We must find it. There are plenty of rocks, Hala repeated soothingly. We can look when you're better. No, we've got to find it,
Kristoff responded, his face twisted in irritation.
If not, we'll have to go back to the southern continent to get another. What sort of rock is it?
Hala asked in surprise.
And what were you doing in the southern continent? Looking for Firestone,
Kristoff explained.
But you found it already,
Hala said. Her brows drew close.
You weren't hoping to find it in that sandstone, were you?
Yes, Kristoff said. That's where we found it before.
Sandstone? Hala repeated dubiously. But Firestone explodes in water.
Not this Firestone, Kristoff replied. It doesn't burn in water. It's what the fire lizards eat, and they find it on the shore on the southern continent.
He frowned.
I've got to find that sample.
What's it look like?
It's a blue-green crystal. There's usually some sandstone around it.
Hala fished in her pocket.
Like this? That's it!
Kristoff cried, reaching for it. Hala gave it to him readily.
But there's loads up there, she said, waving her hand back up toward the landslide. That was just the smallest piece.
Kristoff's eyes widened, and he looked at Peller for confirmation. The young harper nodded. A mixture of joy, relief, and impatience crossed Kristoff's face.
We've got to tell the weir, he exclaimed.
Of Hala, he demanded.
How much was there? How quickly can we get it?
Peller shook his head and pointed at Kristoff's legs. Hala guessed his meaning and said,
We've got to take care of you first.
No, Kristoff cried. We've got to tell the weirs. Until we prove this is the right Firestone and there's enough, they'll still try to mine the old Firestone.
Peller and Hala exchanged worried looks.
All we have to do is find the blue-green rock?
Hala asked, an idea forming in her mind.
Yes,
Kristoff agreed. Hala gave Peller a questioning look. He nodded.
We'll do it, Hala said.
Any luck? Baraller called as Devin strode into the kitchen caverns.
Devin pulled a face, shaking his head while filling a mug with claw from the kettle left on the warming stove.
Nothing in Tillich. I tried Hold Balin as well, but found no likely lads there either.
We've 23 eggs and only 19 solid candidates, Baraller said, frowning.
Perhaps Benio will have better luck, Devin suggested.
Baraller made a sour face.
His Danenth is nowhere near as good as Hearth at spotting candidates. I don't think there will be more than 2 7-days before the hatching.
I can go out again, if you'd like, Devin suggested.
He started to say more, but stopped, clearly listening to his dragon. When he spoke again, he was already moving, dropping the mug of claw on the nearest table.
Peller's found Kristoff. Kristoff's injured.
Go,
Baraller said, waving him off. I'll let Sonya know. Devin waved acknowledgement as Hearth descended from his perch to retrieve his rider.
No broken bones this time either,
Sonya said to Kristoff when he woke the next morning to find himself tucked once again in the High Reach's Weir infirmary. She smiled at him.
I think you do this just to spend time with me.
Sonya's hand descended on his chest as soon as Kristoff tried to sit up.
And again you're trying to move too early, she added with a sigh.
She shook her head at him.
You're going to rest for a while.
How long?
Kristoff demanded petulantly.
I found the Firestone. We've got to mine it.
I know,
Sonya replied, smiling.
Everyone's talking about it.
Alara was furious that you had found it before she could get back out again.
I still am,
Alara snarled from a bed just out of Kristoff's sight in another alcove of the infirmary.
You'll be on your feet soon enough,
Sonya assured her.
And if you're good, we'll give you crutches in another 7-day.
Kristoff looked startled, so Sonya explained.
We had to take her crutches away because she was doing too much on her feet.
She shook her head wonderingly.
What is it about you miners? It's not as though you don't have time. But we don't,
Christoph protested, his words cutting across a similar protest from Alara. A Weir needs 40 tons of Firestone a week when fighting Thread. Sonya shrugged. This new Firestone isn't as dangerous as the old Firestone, Christoph continued in response. We could mine it now and build a stockpile.
And have it ready before Threadfall? Sonya asked.
Maybe even have some in reserve,
Alara called.
But we need to start now, Christoph groaned, leaning back in his bed.
I think you're going to be a worse patient than you were the last time, Sonya muttered ruefully. As the days passed, Sonya discovered that her prediction was more than accurate. Sasan, her father and the Weir's healer, would steel himself every day to enter the infirmary and deal with the two impatient miners.
You can go tomorrow, Sasan told Christoph the evening of his third day at the Weir, provided you agree to do no work.
What's the point, then?
Christoph demanded.
You can supervise,
Sonya told him.
There's no one to supervise,
Christoph snapped. Sonya merely smiled and rose from her place beside him.
In that case, you can wait until you're healed.
As she stood in the doorway, she called over her shoulder.
What should I say to Devin?
Christoph schooled the sour look from his face.
Please tell him that I'd like to go back at first light. Are you sure?
There's a hatching soon. You don't want to miss that.
What's the use of a dragon if it can't flame?
Christoph demanded, shaking his head irritably. I'll do my duty and mine Firestone. Sonya turned back to face Christoph, eyeing him cryptically and saying,
There are other ways to serve Pern, you know.
Christoph grimaced.
This is the one I know.
He remembered his father's sour comment from turns back.
It's what I'm fit for.
The look Sonya gave him was pitying.
If you say so.
There have been some changes since you were last here, Devin warned as they descended through the morning mist. Christoph couldn't imagine that Peller and Hala could have done all that much in the 4 days he'd been gone, however hard-working and dedicated the two seemed to be. The mist thickened into fog as they settled into the valley. Christoph was surprised that Hearth could find the ground, let alone a safe place to land, but the dragon landed without even a bump.
I can't stay, Devin apologized. We've more eggs on the hatching grounds than candidates, so I'm still on search.
Good luck,
Christoph said. Devin gave him an odd look and started to say something, but shook his head and said instead,
Good luck to you as well.
Christoph was alone in the foggy valley, the sun a dim dot just above the horizon. He stopped to catch his bearings, then started in surprise as he heard noises in the distance. The creak of a loaded cart on rails, the distant sound of bellows, the even fainter but unmistakable noise of picks against rock. The whole valley was filled with the noise of work.
Christoph!
A voice called from the fog. A small figure resolved from the shadows. It was Hala. She smiled when she saw him.
Peller says you are not to work, she warned him. But we need you.
I'm sure I can do something, Christoph told her.
Not to work,
Hala said, shaking her head.
We need your advice.
Christoph cocked his head in inquiry. Hala sighed and grabbed his hand, dragging him after her and saying over her shoulder,
It's best if we show you. Come on up to the mines. Mine,
Christoph corrected. Unless you've got more than one, it's just a mine.
Mines,
Hala replied testily.
And we've got three.
Christoph was dumbstruck.
Three? Why did you start three? Well, it seemed pointless not to put everyone to work,
Hala told him.
Everyone?
Christoph repeated blankly. He squinted, trying to see through the fog. He could see Hala clearly now and make out the color of her clothes. They were new and looked freshly washed. He wondered how she had found the time to wash her clothes.
Everyone. How many people are here?
I don't know, Hala said. Ask Peller. I think he's trying to keep count.
Trying? Well, the numbers keep changing. I think another wagon came in during the night, and we've got some farmers further up the valley. They're really thrilled with the soil. They say it'll be great for crops.
Crops? Christoph repeated dully.
Farmers? Peller!
Hala shouted.
Peller! Christoph's here!
She turned back to Christoph.
Mind your head.
Kristoff caught a glimpse of a dark space in front of him and instinctively ducked. They were in a mine.
"Watch out for the rails,"
Hala cautioned. "There should be some glows here," she muttered. "I'll have to talk to Spenno." She raised her voice again to shout, "Spenno! Spenno, where are the glows, you dimwit?" A glow approached them, illuminating an older man.
"Sorry, Hala, I was just down with Peller," the old man Spenno said. "I'll get more glows now," he said, handing her his glow basket. "It's all right, just bring us to Peller."
Oh, certainly, Spenno replied. He glanced at Kristoff, and his eyes widened.
"Is this him?"
"This is Kristoff," Hala said. She turned to Kristoff and whispered, "Everyone's excited that you're here."
"Why?"
Kristoff whispered back. Hala's response was a bit embarrassed.
"Well, Peller and I might have bragged about you a bit. But you're the one who found Firestone that doesn't burn."
"So?"
"You saved them,"
Hala explained, still in a whisper.
"When word got out, they came from all over."
"Miners?"
"No, the shunned."
She took in Kristoff's stunned expression.
"They can work here without shame and without fear. This is their hold."
"Their hold?" Kristoff repeated in surprise. "A hold for the shunned? How is that possible?"
"If they work," Hollis said, "if they don't, they can leave. We feed their children, but if the adults don't work, they don't eat and they don't stay."
"Three minds?" Kristoff said, repeating Hala's earlier statement.
"Yes,"
Hala replied, looking at Kristoff as though wondering if he were all right. She glanced ahead.
"Here's Peller."
The mute harper waved and smiled at Kristoff, beckoning him forward to look at a drawing he had made on a huge slate.
"What is it?"
Kristoff asked, splitting his question between Peller and Hala.
"It's a map of the mines," Hala explained.
Somehow, Peller had found several colors. She pointed out the various sections.
"Red is where we found the greatest concentrations. White is where we're planning on going. Peller wants to know if you have any suggestions."
Kristoff bent over the map, wishing the light were brighter. Hala must have sensed it, for she lifted her glows higher and closer to the map. He peered at the map for a long while, confessing,
"I've never seen anything like it before."
He glanced up at Peller, who looked nervous until Kristoff told him,
"It's perfect."
He pointed to several areas, particularly the red spots.
"It looks like there's a vein running through the mountains, and all three mines pierce it," he said after a moment.
He frowned over Peller's white lines and looked around for something to write with. Peller handed him some white chalk and a bit of cloth for an eraser. Kristoff declined the use of the eraser.
"I don't want to change anything just yet," he said,
drawing a number of dotted lines.
"I'm thinking,"
he explained as he drew, "that perhaps the vein runs north-south through the mountains. If that's so, you could mine here and here to meet the center mine."
"Peller was afraid of cave-ins," Hollis said.
Kristoff glanced up and inspected the beams and woodwork over them.
"Not if your people keep shoring the roof up like that," he said, grinning.
He said to Peller, "You're right to be worried about the sandstone. It's very soft and not good at holding weight. Shore up everything and you'll do fine." He looked around.
"Just how big is the vein, anyway?"
Hollis smiled.
"It's as big as this shaft. We're getting over a ton a shift from each mine."
Kristoff whistled in surprise.
"You said we'd need 40 tons every 7 day for one weir," Hollis said, looking grim. "We can only get about 21 tons right now."
"But now we know what to look for," Kristoff replied. "We can find more mines, maybe one for each weir." A disturbance from the mine entrance distracted them. Spenel called out,
"Devin is here."
"What does he want?" Hala asked in wonder.
Peller shrugged, carefully took the large slate, now marked with Kristoff's dotted suggestions, and hung it back up on the wall before gesturing that the others should precede him.
"Some of the Shund were telling me that Holder children don't start working until they've 12 turns or more,"
Hala remarked as they walked toward the shaft entrance.
"Well, that's silly," Kristoff said. "What would they do with all their free time?"
"I don't know," Hala said. "The youngsters here all work." She gestured toward the camp outside.
"They want to learn a craft before they marry, and by 12 they're already courting."
Peller handed Holla a slate he had been writing on, and she read, "Harpers don't marry until they're older." She glanced back at Peller. "What's older?"
16?
Christoph guessed, glancing to Peller for confirmation. Peller made a go higher gesture with his free hand.
18?
When Peller nodded, Christoph exclaimed in surprise, "Miners are lucky to live 30 turns. We usually mate much earlier." They came to the mine's entrance and squinted. The sun had broken through and was bathing the valley in bright morning sunlight. A gentle breeze had moved the last of the morning's mist away, wafting fragrant smells through the valley. Christoph grunted in surprise at the vista exposed before him. There were tents, wagons, and some small houses sprouting up all over the valley. Three paved roads led up to the hills, one running right up to this mine, the other two to the other mine entrances.
"All this in 4 days?" he asked in amazement.
"They were hungry," Holla said.
At Christoph's look, she explained.
"They had to work to get fed, and Morin brought in a whole group when he came in 2 days ago."
"Holla, there's another wagon coming in,"
a woman called up to them.
"You know what to do, Lara,"
Holla called back.
"See what they can do, find out why they're here and what they'll do. Make sure that Harper Morin knows about them, too."
"Where should I put them?"
Lara called back.
"Find out what's up and then decide," Holla called back,
glancing at Peller for confirmation. Peller smiled and nodded at her decision. Christoph looked at Holla with renewed interest. It seemed that everyone in the camp looked to her for guidance. He guessed that some of that was due to her nature, some of it due to her position as Peller's voice, but he couldn't quite imagine what else would be required to get adults to accept directions from a girl who was just coming into womanhood.
"It wouldn't have worked out this way if it hadn't been for Peller's ability to talk with dragons,"
Holla explained. Christoph's confusion must have been evident, for she explained.
"Even the Shund are wary of the dragons. Having a wing show up whenever Peller needed it was enough to convince even the hardest heads to listen to reason. And Harper Morin sent them all here."
She made a face and then grinned.
"We keep an eye on his drink, and he teaches the little ones their ballads. Respect for dragon riders and dragon kind."
The reference to dragons reminded Christoph that they had left the mine to see Devin. He scanned the valley below and picked out the bronze dragon easily. Devin was much closer to them, moving purposefully. A group of miners noticed the dragon rider and then noticed Christoph, Peller, and Holla. The miners paused on their way to the mines, curiously, some pointing at Christoph, others at Devin.
"Peller," Devin called when he was close enough to be heard, "there's a hatching."
"A hatching?" Holla cried delightedly. "Peller, did you arrange for us to—"
The look on his face cut her off.
"What's wrong?"
"Not going," Peller wrote quickly, holding it up to her and then to Devin as he joined the group.
"You can talk to dragons," Devin said. "We're short, just one candidate."
Peller shook his head again and pointed firmly to the ground.
"But if there are not enough candidates for the hatchlings," Devin said, his voice full of despair,
"then—" "What will happen?"
Christoph asked. Holla glanced between them, her face betraying a wide range of emotions. Peller gave Holla a horrified look, and she knew.
"The hatchling will die."
"It will go between forever," Devin confirmed.
Peller frowned, torn. Devin caught the way he looked around at the valley, at Holla, at the mines, at Holla, at Christoph, at Holla, and finally at some distant vision only he could see. When he caught Devin's eyes again, the wingleader knew Peller's decision. For whatever reasons, and Holla was bound at the center of them, Peller felt obligated to stay.
"Who else could go?"
Holla asked Devin, flicking her eyes toward Christoph. Christoph caught the look and held up his hands, protesting,
"Not me. I don't deserve the honor."
"Why don't you let the hatchlings decide?" Devin suggested.
"But there's work to do here,"
Christoph protested.
"We'll do it,"
Holla assured him, jerking her head toward Peller, who nodded emphatically in agreement.
"You've shown us how, but—"
"Go on,"
Holla said, jerking her head toward the dragon in the distance. Christoph's eyes widened. He looked longingly toward the dragon, and then back to Holla.
"Are you afraid, then?"
she taunted. She grabbed him and turned him toward the dragon.
"There's your future. Go on. Impress.
Impress a bronze for us all, and show them at high reaches. Show them what to expect from Firehold."
She gave him one final push and turned away, walking back to the waiting crowd of miners. Head held high, Christoph walked to his future.
Epilogue. Dragons fire way up high, light the way, protect the sky. Dragons flame burning bright, char away the thread mid-flight. Firehold, AL-498.8.
As Katov circled down, he was surprised by how much Firehold had changed in the 3 turns since his impression of Bronze Sereth. He was not surprised to see Hala standing in the center of all the activity, but he was surprised at how tall and graceful she had grown. She raised a hand as soon as she identified him, and then was jumping up and down, waving both hands frantically to catch his attention. Katov smiled.
"Ready?" "Ready,"
Sereth agreed. The bronze dived and then flipped wingtip over wingtip, rolling around in the air so that the world was one moment below, next moment beside, next moment above, beside again, and finally, properly, below. A surge of elation spread through dragon and rider, while beneath them erupted noises, first of fear, then of amazement and outright pandemonium.
"I think they know we're here,"
Katov said with a huge grin. He asked Sereth to land in the clearing. Hala had grown into great beauty. For a moment, Katov's heart faltered, and he wondered whether it had been a mistake to return, particularly on this festive day. The moment lasted only as long as it took Hala to race across the distance and grab him in her arms tightly.
"You came! Oh, we'd hoped you'd come!" she roared into his good ear, her exuberance complete and unfeigned.
Just as Katov thought he might recover, another figure thundered into him and grabbed both him and Hala into a huge bear hug.
"Peller?"
Katov thought to himself in amazement. Katov had never imagined that Peller could grow so tall and broad. Indeed, the bronze rider felt nearly dwarfed by the other. The two fire miners pulled back as one, and in that instant, Katov lost any misgivings he had had at coming back. Peller's gentle movements were complemented and amplified by the exuberant but indefinably graceful movements of Hala. Just as he, Katov, was forever bonded with Sereth, so were Peller and Hala bonded to each other. They moved, Katov decided, like parts of the same body, with a respect and strength that flowed between them.
"I'm glad I came," he replied,
and he realized that he truly was. He took a moment to grab Peller and pull him into a deep hug, putting into his motion all the gratitude he felt for the other's selflessness turns gone by. Strengthened by the warm embrace, he pushed Peller away and stared deep in his eyes. Then he turned to Hala.
"Would you let us talk alone for a moment?"
Hala raised a hand toward Peller, who nodded in response. Hala cocked her head at both of them.
"Only for a moment, no longer,"
she declared, and raced back to the other miners of the hold. Peller followed her prancing movement with his eyes until she was lost in the throng, then politely turned his attention back to Katov. Katov turned to Sereth, unable to keep the joy of impression from brightening his face. He turned back to Peller again, looking serious.
"You could have had him, you know,"
he said softly. "I'm sure you would have got a bronze." Peller met his friend's eyes and nodded slowly, glancing only briefly at the beautiful bronze dragon.
"Why?"
Katov asked, his face full of honest inquiry. Peller pulled something from his tunic and handed it to Katov. It was a tiny yellow flower. He reached into another pocket and pulled out a second yellow flower. Beckoning politely to Katov to hand the first flower back, Peller gently took the two flowers and wound them together by the stems. He handed the paired flowers back to Katov. Katov looked at them, and then at Peller.
"I don't understand."
Peller pointed to the flowers, and then to Katov and Sereth. Then Peller pointed to the flowers again, and to himself, and off to where Hala had vanished.
"You are bound to Hala like I am to Sereth?" Katov guessed.
"I'd say that everyone sees that," he added with a laugh. Peller waggled his hand in response. "Not quite.
He turned away from Katov and gestured far off in the distance. Katov followed his gesture and spotted a meadow full of yellow flowers, the same as those Peller had produced.
The flowers are on mounds,
Sereth, with his greater eyesight, informed him.
Graves? Katov asked Peller. Hala was the one who put the flowers on the graves?
Peller smiled and nodded.
But you could have still impressed and brought Hala to the weir, Katov protested.
He wouldn't have traded his bond with Sereth for anything, but he couldn't help feel that the chance should have been Peller's instead.
Peller turned back to Katov and nodded, his lips pursed in acknowledgement.
So why didn't you?
Peller pointed to the two twined flowers in his hand. He crumpled them up and then pointed to the graves in the distance.
If you and Hala weren't here, then no one would tend the graves?
Peller nodded, then held up a hand. There was more. He raised both hands and made the gesture of pushing away, turning in a great circle.
And no one would care for the shunned.
Peller nodded.
That still doesn't seem enough to exchange for a dragon.
Peller held up a hand again for patience, then raised the other and grabbed them together, going down on one knee, pleading.
Whatever you want, Katov told him fervently. Always and forever.
Peller shook his head and held up just a finger, only once.
Any time, Katov corrected him firmly. Ask away.
Peller looked very nervous, which surprised Katov. For a moment, the bronze rider wondered if he had promised more than he could deliver. Then the moment passed as he resolved that he would meet any request Peller placed on him. Peller pointed hesitantly to his head, and then to Sereth's great head. Katov grasped the request instantly.
Sereth, what does Peller want to say to me?
Katov waited, trying to control his anxiousness as he felt his dragon communicating with another. It was an odd feeling, and Katov forced any jealousy out of his mind. After all, he could talk with Sereth any time.
Peller,
and Katov was surprised by the warmth of his dragon's tone when referring to the mute harper,
says that Hala is his voice, that he is her song, and only together can they make music.
The dragon paused for a moment.
The music they make is compassion, and their song is for all Pern.
We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of Dragon's Fire by Anne McCaffrey and Todd McCaffrey. Copyright 2006 by Anne McCaffrey and Todd J. McCaffrey. Read by Dick Hill. Directed by Ruth Bloomquist. Engineered by Matthew Kristoloff. Performance copyright 2006, Brilliance Audio. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance Audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225, or visit our website at www.brilliantaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan, 49417.